and welcome to the Evolution Exchange Nordics podcast. At Evolution, we're committed to helping people and Nordics tech organizations realize their true potential. Our goal is to develop deep relationships with individuals, building trust to make doing business easier. I'm Jacob Byerly from Evolution Recruitment Solutions, and today I'm going to be your host. Today, I'm joined by my panel. It's an exchange podcast, so this is a dedicated episode to the boys over at Squidler. We've got Matthias Ask, Oscar Wickstrom, and finally, we've got Christopher Suarez. It's going to be an interesting panel today. We're going to dive deeper into the topic of Squidler. I guess we can start by working our way around the room with some introductions. Tell us exactly who you are. What you guys do, maybe what your biggest passion is at the moment, or an interesting fact about yourselves. Why don't you kick us off, Matthias?
So my name is Matthias Ask. Great to be here. Thank you, Jacob, for the invitation. I'm the CEO of Squidler, and passion right now, especially in this podcast, I would say, is autonomous testing and making the web a better place for everyone. My background is in engineering, product management. I've done a couple of startups and other things as well. But yeah, over to you, Oscar.
Yeah, my name is Oscar Wickstrom. And I'm the CTO of Squidler. And my background is also within software engineering for a good number of years. And I've worked with these guys for probably as long in different forms. But now we're here together in this company. So that's what I'm excited about these days. Yeah, Christopher.
Right, Christopher Suarez. I've been running my own consultancy firm for almost 25 years now. In the last years, I ventured into some angel investments, which has been a really interesting journey. I'm an engineer at heart, and I mean, my current passion is really to start building Squidler as a company together with these guys. I've longed for this for so long. This is
To everyone's surprise, our passion is Squidler. That is the least surprising answer ever.
Hi, everyone. This is Chris Bennett here, the Nordics Managing Director here at Evolution. We're committed to doing recruitment in a different way that adds value to both our clients and candidates by providing you with amazing speakers and leading-edge discussions on what's going on in the tech scene at the moment. There are three reasons why you should contact me. If you would like to speak on a future podcast, if you are interested in hiring awesome tech, data, product or gaming freelancers for your business, or if you are looking for an exciting new organization to work with, please get in touch. Thank you so much for listening, and I really hope to hear from you soon. Please enjoy the rest of the podcast.
Perfect. Well, I guess now that we've established a little bit of a context to each of you, we can dive deeper into the topic of focus, which is, of course, is Squidler as a company, but also, you know, what you guys are doing and what waves you're creating in the space at the moment. You've kind of brought a few subtopics, if you will, to the panel. And as usual, we'll sort of work our way around the room and asking each of you to pose the topics and give a little bit of a reasoning behind it and an answer. Of course, everybody's going to have the opportunity to share your own perspectives, although I imagine they'll be quite similar. But why don't we start with a brief overview of what exactly is Squidler, and then we can dive maybe more into the individual subtopics.
Absolutely. So Squidler.io. On Squidler.io, we offer essentially the totally autonomous and no configuration, no code generation website testing. So what we do is pretty much what, I mean, I remember reading a blog, I shared this with you, Oscar, where it was a testing blog where they were like, oh, imagine if there was a world where you could just enter a URL and you would get your website tested, but that doesn't exist. And we're like, but maybe it could, right? So this is like the thing that we've been striving for, empowering people that are not necessarily tech savvy, but that are dependent on a website, such as an e-com sales channel or anything like that, to be able to understand and know that their website works. And with just entering a URL and without having generated tests or necessarily any tech skill. And
And this comes from both a technical journey that I think I started on probably like 7 or 8 years ago, which has been partly academic and partly very techy and so on. And but that combined with this underlying interest and passion for the web, basically, that's always been part of what I think is important and what I want to do. So this these academic aspects sort of married together with that web, the passion for the web, which turned out as Squiddler eventually. So we had a bit of a gnarly road there. Eventually, we ended up forming this company.
When you say the web there, Oscar, well, what's I if I remember correctly, you started writing something like back in the day before you went into the whole testing perspective.
Yeah. So, I mean, the web has gone through different phases, you could say, but around, I don't know, 2010 or something, we went into this web 2.0 thing. And websites went from just being sort of documents, static pages with text and links, to being more and more interactive. And people started using JavaScript and so on to make them more interactive and to do more programmatic things on those pages. And eventually the web sort of, or the web page turned into sort of just a place to put your app, right? And a part of that sort of lost some key aspects and some valuable things about how the web works and how your browser works. So that has been some, in some way, a part of what I've been ranting about or trying to fix or trying to approach differently since about that time, actually. And yeah, that writing started with as a book, which was focused on how to write web apps that are interactive and interesting and so on and modern, without losing those key aspects of the web. It never turned into a book. I had some discussions with publishers and so on, but I didn't have the time to go invest in that. So, but still, the discussions have been like coming and going all these years, and I've always tried to keep close to that sort of dream of what the web should be and how web apps should work. And that also informs a lot of things that we do now in Squiddler. When we test websites, what we think they should be, that is one thing that we do in Squiddler. We actually decide, or at least pick out like conventions. This is how a web app should work. So we have these examples, like let's say you're on a e-com site and you're scrolling through products, and then you click product, you end up on a new page. You're like, nah, that wasn't the right one. Click back, and then you lose your scroll position and you're back in the top. It's extremely annoying, right? I think everyone has seen it. This is one of these. It seems like a technical detail, but it's the experience is very degraded when that happens, and it happens a lot because of how people build web apps these days. And that is something that kind of usually works, or should have worked, if it was the old kind of way people built web apps. But with the newer ones, we've lost some of these properties and some of these conventions. And that's just one example of what we test for and what we try to find, but guided by that underlying, what you say, it image, or the goals of how web apps should work.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the most frustrating things when you are online and browsing something on a web page. Like when you go down and you found like you're choosing between two articles, like if it's a t-shirt on Black Friday or whatever, and then you go into one, and then when you go back, you realize that now I'm about 100 meters of scrolling from the other one that I wanted to look at. It was just beside that. But Oscar, I mean, having lived beside you in the work life for a few years now, I would say it's like I'm a bit surprised that you don't describe this as like a spiritual journey for you. I mean, I'm kind of having since we first met in the first project, to see all the things that you have done to try to improve the whole space, not just with the web. And I mean, to just the passion you had when we chose how we use different frameworks. I don't know if we should mention them, why we developed Squiddr to post like requirements on ourselves to improve. I mean, and that kind of always pushes me to also do better, learn new things. So, I mean, you're really
Yeah,
standing on the
so one thing we do is we test Squiddr with Squiddr, and that sort of forces us to be true to those conventions, right?
Yeah, and whenever we find something, it is it's the strangest thing ever, because I mean, the way that when we find a problem with Squiddr, we literally show a screencast or a step-by-step guide for how that problem occurred. So you could think of Squiddr as having kind of a traditional web crawler, but it doesn't. It actually opens up a website, a web browser, and navigates your website as a human would. So you get that even the single page apps that are loaded with where the content is loaded with JavaScript, we will be able to test those and validate those against the rules that Oscar mentioned as well. But seeing your own website being tested by your own website in a screencast is just the weirdest meta thing. It flips my mind every single time, at least. But I want to go back to one thing, and that is because the why here, your why of and your North Star of making the web better collides pretty well with my North Star, at least when it comes to creating a better user experience, always like actually providing value to humans, right? Then the technical implementations are not there for the technical implementation itself. It's there for some a human to gain value from. And I remember us talking about a technique, specifically property-based testing, that you've been passionate about for a number of years. It took me such a long while to understand it, and then once I understood it was like, oh, this is awesome, but no one's going to get this. Like the threshold and the closeness to other things is so challenging, so that it needs to have some other framing, right?
Yeah, it was pretty defeating. I was really passionate about this testing technique, and Matthias just cut it down. It's like, you're never gonna get that into the hands of more than like five people ever. So
Yeah.
that was something. But so that's interesting, because that eventually turned that property-based testing journey I was on, or have been on, and that turned into more kind of a web browser testing experiment. Still very academic, still very inaccessible to people. Very like, there was a paper, and there have been like five users, I guess. So I might have reached my ceiling of five users and in that realm. But then Matthias started nagging me, like, this web thing you're doing there, that seems more interesting. Could we maybe make that accessible to more than those five people? And yeah, and I wasn't very positive at that point. This was 4 years ago
You
or
would
something
not.
like that. No, I was like, no, you don't
You
get
were.
it. You wouldn't get it, right?
No, exactly. I would even use the word dismissive,
Yeah.
but in a very friendly way, right?
But
No,
yeah,
no, no.
we're coming from two very different perspectives, you say that. And
Actually, did
we
not.
didn't really find one common way forward at that point. But
Kristoffer is really
then.
one of the instigators for it coming together, right? Because I remember you poking me at least in the side, going like, "Hey, when are we gonna do something? Like, we need to build a product, we need to do something." And then I had this thing with Oscar just nagging in my brain, going like, "Yeah, but there's this thing that Oscar doesn't believe in," and then, right? So you poking there really triggered the creation of Squid.
Yeah, I mean,
Yeah.
one thing I kind of am still learning is like how many things need to come together at the same time for magic to happen. I mean, you can have good or great people, but we all need to be in the same space, and that kind of didn't happen really until kind of last fall. And if I go back to that time, I mean, even it took some exterior happenings for us to get triggered to work together on this, even though we kind of have nagged this or had this dance around doing something together for, at least in my mind, in my opinion, for at least 4 or 5 years. And I guess, I mean, so a bit of a background story here. About 6 years ago, I kind of started a group where a group of loosely coupled friends and colleagues. We started with WhatsApp, then we moved on to Signal. Started hanging out. We have like similar interests, and then we had our first meetup like one time a year. And this was, I would say, this was the incubator for all this, in that sense that, I mean, we started to discuss things. We even started to discuss like if we should do products together, if some people in the group were interested, some weren't. Oscar and I even did a small thing together last year with the whole energy crisis and all. And then we kind of almost forced you in, Matthias. You remember that? I mean, you could feel the awkwardness that you wanted to not FOMO, but you were, it wasn't your passion. And then you just put your foot down and said, "Hey, man, I want to do something you do, but I want to do this instead." And
yeah, I mean,
it
my
put everything on the edge. Yeah.
My background with startups was, I mean, it's doing a startup, doing a side project of any kind of scale or with any kind of ambition is a creative effort, and it's exhausting. I mean, you need to have that passion. You need to feel it. I've been in situations before where I've been immersed in passion and just diving straight into it and spending 4 years with something that I truly believed in and coming out of it richer in experience, but completely creatively exhausted. And it took years for me really to come back from that exhaustion. And when these and I've run my consultant company beside that, I've had employments and so on as well. But when these opportunities came up, it was always coming back to this. But there's this idea around testing, creating that thing where you don't have to actually do anything. You just magically enter a URL and you would get your website tested. I think there's something in what Oscar is doing. So even when Christopher pulled me into that other thing around the energy stuff, I was like, yeah, okay, I'll hang out with you guys. But it wasn't really, my heart was not there at all. It was like, yeah, okay, cool. But, and then at one point, just, I think, a friend of ours who we worked with before, Konrad Eriksson, started up a company called Bifrost. So he stopped working with us in our day jobs to go in and jump on a startup and take that journey. He's done startups before. And that was also a trigger that kind of flipped it, going like, okay. So that's still on the table as an option moving forward. And then Christopher comes and puts
me. We're not too old yet for doing that, right?
I was thinking the same thing. We're not too old.
We're not too old, no. No, and hear us yet. Convincing ourselves over and over. We're not too old. No, but absolutely not.
I guess I was going to ask a question. Obviously, you guys, you come from a background of startups, like you said, Squidler. You've been doing it for 18 months, something like that, to almost coming up to the 2 year mark. Is there any sort of advice that you would give to a listener perhaps tuning in at the moment, thinking of starting a similar journey?
Well, absolutely. I mean, first of all, if you have something that you're passionate about, we've started Squidler as a side project to our day jobs. So right now it's a fully fledged product working. You can go to squidler.io, but if you're passionate about something and there's an itch, like scratch it, please. I mean, go ahead. It's really that. If it's a lot of work, of course, but again, if you have that, if you really want to do something, then find friends and act on it. That's the only thing that I can say around that, because it's really nothing more. Trying to do it in whatever way possible. For us, it's been a side project for many different reasons, but it started out as a side project, and that was the journey that we had to have. I don't think that you need to emulate someone else's journey when it comes to these things. It's really up to you. The people that you're starting out with, the opportunities that you have, the skill sets that you have, that's going to guide you in the way that you can do it, right?
Yeah. I think for my part, and again, it's not advice for other people directly because everyone is different, but for my part, I've tried doing projects on my own before, and it always fades out or fails in some way, because I think I've learned that I need someone to, or some group to lean on and to do it together. And finding people that you trust and you can do it with is key for my own success in this kind of thing. It's really tricky otherwise, because you have ups and downs, and you can get be supported by others and sort of leave other tasks to other people, and you can do it together is much stronger, I think.
But just as Christopher was on to before, it's the coming together of many things, right? It's the right idea with the right people at the right time. A lot of the time, people don't have the luxury to spend spare time on something, or take a risk and jump on something new, and so on. So it's, I personally don't think that you can force it. But to Oscar's point, doing it on your own, yeah, works for some people. But I think those are corner cases. Finding someone to do it with, building a product, creating that change, I think is key.
Yeah, we sort of had the luxury of just stumbling upon something that is too good to not do. But I don't know where we would end up if we were like actively searching for, gonna do a startup, but just pick the first idea that comes into our heads. Perhaps not as good. So it took a while for us to sort of get into this, but I think it turned out well. So that is, I've never been sort of actively searching for startups in that way of just trying to squeeze out an idea.
In this case, this was more the case of we couldn't help it, right? It had to be done. It really was this brain bug that never let go. So I remember in, was it October, 18 months ago or something like that, where I sent you a message, Oscar, in the evening. I'd been poked by Christopher. Konrad had started his own startup. And then I just go like, I need to message him. Like that test thing that we've been talking about. Should we just venture into it and see where that's going to head? And I remember sending the next message was like, okay, so I pressed send on that one because I knew the can that I'm opening up with that, right? I know what's coming with it. But it is an interesting journey. And the product itself is turning out to be, well, if we have any Swedish listeners, we would say a kioskvältare. But that's the, it's the, yeah, I think it's going to make a dent, actually. It's a really, really fun journey that we're on.
Yeah. For yourself, Christopher, as well. I mean, you, when you introduce yourself at the beginning, you've invested in smart startups plenty of times before. You have a background working with lots of different startups in different sectors, I imagine. Is there any difference in opinion, or perhaps another bit of anecdote or advice that you would give, or a personal story that might be worth sharing?
I mean, I've never been in it. I've been outside it, and I've been lucky to be allowed to invest in some of the in the startups that I have invested in. But now I'm in it like knee deep. Like, so this is not something where you look at someone else's work. Now I'm part of the group that's working, and I would like ask, can you ask me for advice in 2 years when we're through with all this, or in maybe 5 years to see where we're at? I know so many mistakes that we have done already now, but I mean, the mistakes are not a problem when you learn from it and move on. So, and we have learned so much during it's already one and a half year almost. It's hard to imagine, but if it boils down to one thing, it's like one thing I'm coming back to, and this might be a bit strange, but it's like this first Avengers movie, you have a conversation between Iron Man and Loki in the Avengers Tower, and Loki goes like something in the lines of like, yeah, but how can you think you can defeat me, a puny human? I mean, I'm a god. And then Tony Stark goes, yeah, but you know, we have a Hulk. And that's kind of one of the advices that I would give, is like, get a Hulk. And because Oscar is really our Hulk. I know he's like now saying that he needs us as well, and we do need him, and we need each other, because we always, I mean, you always have your dips and your upsides, and of course we complement each other. But when we manage together, all of us, to get in that zone, then we have a Hulk. which means that most obstacles are just, we can overcome them together. And I think that doing this during evenings and weekends, one of the most important learnings that I think we made together is that don't forget to meet. Because when you're in your day job and you meet often, you have your daily scrums or whatever you want to call them, your stand-ups, your meetings, where you sync as a team. But when you do it in evenings and during weekends, we'll never be the whole team working together. So what we learned quite quickly is like we need to have those physical get-togethers, whether it's drinking something in the pub together and talking, or it's actually spending an afternoon together in a meeting room, be it at someone's home, or as happened to us, in a room full of porcelain elephants on the Swedish countryside or whatever. You need to have those physical meetings, because otherwise you start drifting apart, both as a team and technology-wise. I think that's what I would say would be an interesting learning for us.
Yeah,
definitely. And I was going to say, I mean, for those at home, me and the boys, we've been speaking previously, and I love that analogy of making sure that you have your team of tech Avengers around you to make sure that everything is, every sort of angle is covered for. But let's loop it a little bit back to Squidler again, guys. You know, this is what we're here to talk about. Perhaps let's go a little bit more into the autonomous and the continuous testing side of things. We've discussed it briefly, but could you tell me a little bit more about that?
Sure. Yeah, so there are some key aspects in how Squidler works. So the autonomous part basically means, I can explain it in terms of how things are usually done. That might be a good way to get a reference. But okay, so normally when you test like websites or code more in general, perhaps, either you test it like fully manually, people click around or do stuff and assert that, you know, things are working as they should, or you automate. So basically you write small programs that test your system for you, but someone has to write those programs, or those automated tests, which are usually called, might be called scenarios and stuff like that as well. But writing those tests, that takes time, and maintaining those tests over time, because things change in the world and in these systems, and then the tests sort of go out of date, and you have to update tests or be in sync with what the system should do, and so on. And this is especially true for web pages that change in a lot of different ways, and these tests break all the time. So it's a huge maintenance cost of having a good test coverage, like tests that actually exercise the important bits of your system. There's a huge maintenance cost associated with that. Most developers have probably seen that or tried that or experienced that pain, that cost. Yeah, so inject in. Okay, you just wanted to, yeah. Okay, yes, we have one. So with autonomous testing, what we try to do is to remove that aspect of having to write the test. There are tools nowadays that are like no code or low code solutions, where you're still writing tests, but you're doing it not with like a programming language. You might do it in natural text and have some AI thingy translate that into tests. Or you might record, like you open up a browser, you click around, and you just record that session, and then you replay that session all over each time you run. But still, someone has to do that, and someone has to update them and make sure that they are correct.
And they're still very brittle, right? Even if they're recorded and if they're generated, there's still this moment in time where this test should be in this specific way. It's very specific and very down into the nitty-gritty.
Yeah, exactly. And there's another backside of this. So I should mention these tools are getting better. So they get less brittle. They do some magic stuff to identify, like, this is probably the button you wanted to click, even if it's moved, whatever. But there's another aspect as well, because this kind of testing is limited to what we can come up with. The humans creating these tests and maintaining them, they set the boundaries of what's going to happen. So oftentimes in you know, any real world or complex system, there are like perhaps endless possibilities, and we can only come up with a few of those, and we might not think of the interesting corner cases and the things we didn't program for to start with. So these tests tend to be, the coverage might seem like a, you seem to have some test coverage, but in reality, you're missing out on very interesting and tricky cases that you didn't think about.
And that's what started your journey towards property-based testing as well, right? When realizing that, I mean, because that's the thing that at the same time as we as humans, when it comes to the time at which we are defining the tests, we're limited in our imagination. When we introduce the aspect of time, of imagination over time, we are really, in that sense, as human, as species, we are chaos monkeys. Like, we can come up with all sorts of ways to destroy systems, either be it by intent or unintentionally. We are really good at being creative. And I mean, the randomizer within the humans is big.
Yeah, but there is also this combination of the mechanics of writing all these tests. It takes time, it's effort, and having a sort of bad imagination up front of what should be interesting cases. That together sort of limits the whole testing enterprise when you write tests manually.
Yeah, and then there's the aspect as well. I mean, if you're writing tests manually, you need to be technically skilled. So as an organization, you need to have code developers, you need to have coders, have that in-house, or you have to have a vendor that provides it. So if you're now a small to medium-sized enterprise where your website is a sales channel or a communications channel or the channel where you're getting your leads from, your business is what you care about, and the website is a tool for that, but you don't necessarily have all that you need in order to create those tests that Oskar is talking about now, right?
Yeah. Even if you had the no code tools, you would still have to spend a lot of time on creating that test suite. So that brings us into the other part, which is the continuous testing part. So if you take such a system, which is, you know, fairly complex, it could be like a web app with a, or an e-com site or something like that. If you would try to like assess how many different types of, like how many different user journeys are there? What are the combinations of things I could do here? It quickly becomes, if not infinite, then, you know, galaxy.
Oh, maybe. I spent years working in finance at a large retailer and just destroying people that came in and saying, well, this is the customer journey. And I'm like, but if the customer does this here, infinite permutations of that customer journey.
Yeah. So in practice, you cannot test everything. You can't. It's just a fact. And what you do instead is you have to sample, basically. You have to test something. And if you have a manually created set of tests, you're always testing the same sample. If instead you can use randomness as, you can sort of use randomness as your friend. If you use that, you can get new tests all the time. The more you run, the more you test. More cases, more journeys, more combinations of actions, and so on. So if you do that over time, often enough, you will just gain test coverage all the time. So that's just one key idea here. Yeah.
And I just want to say that this is the key idea. And the storyline here in the narrative arc around property-based testing has evolved so much since I heard it the first time. But this that you now talked about is what I went like, oh, this is so cool, but that the threshold is high. So, I mean, the conceptual aspect of generative testing isn't simple at all.
Right. If you look at sort of the mathematics of it, it's trickier. And but you can perhaps see it as just some kind of... we call it our virtual user, basically. So if you think about the user or all the customers on your site or whatever, as they will find the bugs eventually in your system, if we could sort of simulate that, have a user that just does all the weird stuff that you might imagine and that could actually happen theoretically, eventually that will find it as well, and hopefully before customers. So that is how we approach that.
Yeah, and that's a very important point there is as well. I mean, when you have the potential of infinite permutations, it's non well, let's call it non-practical to be exhaustive in your testing. So one test is not testing the entire system, but over time, every function will be tested. Given infinite time, every infinite permutation of user journey will of course be tested. But I mean, there's the way that our virtual user works, as it navigates, open up the browser and navigates the website, it's informed by heuristics as well. So it's not complete randomness, but it's going to go like, oh, should I scroll? Should I click this link that I see here? Should I click this dropdown? Should I do this action? And then there's kind of this balancing to that model. Like it doesn't, it's not very practical to click back and forth and scroll and scroll and scroll and scroll if you're not doing anything on the website, right? So there's this informedness to the randomness as well that we're doing.
Yeah. So,
but basically that's our new punchline now then. Randomness is your friend, right? That's pretty gonna go out and say to people, right?
That's a good punchline.
I really like that one. Yeah, you just let that one pass by you, but I'm gonna remember that. I'm gonna hold us to that.
So I was reading this Nicholas Taleb book series, which ends with, I think that the last book is Anti-Fragile. And that is a lot around this idea of randomness being your friend. He's like an old finance guy and done a lot of other statistical work and so on. But he talks a lot about how you can utilize randomness and be sort of not only robust, but gain from randomness. And that I think this is actually a nice example of doing that. So what we do is we have this kind of virtual user, which just goes around, does kind of random things a lot. And then we also have this sort of package of expectations on how web apps should work, right? So as it navigates around and does all these things to your website, we also check that, okay, things are looking as they should. And what should you say? We try to find obvious symptoms of things not working as they should. We can't really say that, you know, you have a little table with numbers and yeah, that's the correct numbers. We don't know your domain. We don't know what your business is about, what should be in that number. But we can say that the site looks like it has broken or something is not loading or yeah, a lot of these kinds of things.
I think one of the things that we've learned over time here explaining this is that when we get to this point in the storyline, people go like, but what, how are you validating and what if it's not the domain? So let's take some examples. I think everyone has seen NaN, not a number, leaked out into content, or brackets, undefined, where it's some dynamic piece of content on a web page, which is broken or it's been exposed in a bad way from a JavaScript perspective. That's one of the problems that we're finding. So once when our virtual user is navigating your website, just as any human would, whenever it sees something that matches those patterns, it goes like, oh, this is probably a problem.
The classic email when it's like, hey, --, first name, --. Like, yeah, that's probably not right.
Exactly. And it's the same thing with when you go into a website and you have like a slight side scroll, you probably have some divs that are overflowing. We're not necessarily saying that your divs are overflowing or this div is too long or anything like that. We don't have an opinion on that. Squidler doesn't know your website per se, but we do know that when we scroll down here, all of a sudden there's a slight side scroll. And usually that's not very appreciated. So that is degrading the user experience. So essentially at the end of the day, we're trying to create kind of a baseline for website quality where you go like, okay, you're covering, if we talk about making the web better, each and every test that we're doing will inform you on how your website could provide a generally better experience to your user. And that goes for everything. So right now we have a number of functional tests and usability tests that we're testing against as we're navigating, but we also have the complete Axe core library that we're testing against, 100 plus tests or rules for website accessibility. So WCAG, Website Content Accessibility Guideline, which are gonna be legislated 2025 for bunch of companies, right, over in the EU. At least large enterprise e-com sites will have to have legal requirements on covering this. So essentially,
didn't you even see a Reddit thread on that one, Matthias, where you saw that it was actually people being sued on that in the US, well, right?
Well, it's Ada in the US. I saw some, it wasn't a Reddit thread. I think it was on Shopify, where they were talking about when you do customizations to themes in Shopify. Shopify, of course, can't validate that it's, or can't guarantee that it's compliant with Ada legislation and WCAG guidelines, right? So the discussion there was how can I test and verify my Shopify, which is a SaaS. I mean, they're not necessarily tech-savvy organizations when you can just click and set up your e-com. But if you want to do changes and you want to bring in another theme, then you need to still verify. And I think the number was something like, on average, the when a company was sued for breaking a website accessibility, according to Ada, on average in Nevada, state of Nevada, it was $38,000 in fines, which is quite significant if you're a small or medium-sized company. Right? A lot of the accessibility testing that is done right now, I mean, I'm not saying that you can automate all accessibility testing at all, but creating that baseline is hard right now because of most of the code-based validation of accessibility is quite static. So it's either it's a plugin that you have in your browser on the page that has been loaded, or it's in the continuous integration and continuous deployment validating the code. However, when you have dynamically loaded code, single page applications, all these things, when you have different states, things that happen when you navigate, when you do something, when you act as a user, all of a sudden it might not find, you might have accessibility issues like deep down in the user experience. Because of the virtual user and the way that we're doing generative testing, Squidler will capture more than those other tools that we have and do it without any kind of effort at all. So being able to make accessibility accessible is quite, I mean, it's very, that's where I think that, I remember you telling me like, oh, we're going to be able to introduce the entire Axe core suite into Squidler. I remember the hairs on my arms standing up because this is kind of just, it's right now I'm chills, right? Because this is hard stuff, but a lot of people are affected by it. I mean, we have a lot of people that are challenged with their experiences online due to disabilities. So being able to be part of making the web more accessible, I think, is awesome thing. Christopher.
Yeah, that was our first module, right? First we did accessibility, then we were like, yeah, now we can make modules. So then we ventured into modules, and then we could do then we took language after that, if I remember things correctly. And then when we started talking about it. But wasn't the side scrolling, wasn't that, didn't we discover that on our own side? Which one of the bugs did we discover? Do you remember that? Or I just remember the first time we ran accessibility testing on Squidler and we were like, oh my God, we have so many things to fix.
Yeah,
we found with the language thing as well, like typos everywhere.
Yeah.
So one of those test suites that we've introduced, one is Axe Core for accessibility testing. Another one that was added recently was a language tool. So essentially spell checking and grammar checking for just autonomously for all content on your websites. And if we find a problem and it's like a problem, a product name or something specific for your domain that isn't in there, if you mute that, it kind of works like the spell checker in Word, but for your website. So that's another one. But it's interesting from that perspective that Christopher says it's an expandable experience that we're building. So it's going to get better and better and better, and we're going to add more and more problems that we can find for all our customers.
More types of problems.
And I'm happy because I mean I usually get spell corrected from Zoharis to Sauron, which is not so fun always, But so far, I think it's let me go in our language testing. So I'm happy we have not fell into that trap.
Added a special no Sauron module for you.
Yeah. No Sauron
But Christopher Sauron
module.
is a powerful name, so I mean, come on. Works with the
Yeah,
Avengers thing, perhaps. Exactly. Should also say on the Avengers stuff, I mean, yes, we have a Hulk, but we have the full Avengers team. It's not just the three of us. It's we're a full team of six people working on this that happen to work. So just an amazing team of engineers and designer and just full scale Avengers team. So it's really it's so far it's been an awesome journey, and I'm looking forward to it being an even more amazing journey moving forward.
On the topic of how it works, could maybe just add to it that we're currently working on how the tool sort of learns about your website over time as well. So there is the randomness, then there's the sort of informed heuristics on like maybe we shouldn't just scroll all the time, but we should do some other interesting things more and so on. But then there's this third bit that we're working on, which is if we run tests on your site over time and we're sort of expanding our sample of whatever could be done and tested, we can learn, basically build a machine learning model of your site and improve our testing and make it more effective as we run more tests. And that is one of the big future tracks in what we do.
Exactly. I mean, a lot of the time when people talk about AI today, it's a very specific branch of AI. It's generative AI. And if we're going to be honest, it's someone else's generative AI that we're talking about. It's OpenAI or it's Google's AI. It's most people are not training generative AI models on billions and billions of or even trillions of documents and images. What we're doing here is that we're introducing this aspect of intelligent applications, right? With of a learning application that becomes better over time, where everything gets informed by everything that has happened, and it can take intelligent decisions moving forward. So, for us, that's not the black box that well, we're gonna utilize those black boxes as well moving forward, but not as a core component, but rather as an opportunity to find problems or do visual validation. But this is traditional, more like fundamental machine learning that we're getting into here, which I think is very, very interesting.
Yeah, it seems that I imagine a lot of people that have been invested in AI for a long time being a bit annoyed these days when everything is about LLM and OpenAI and ChatGPT and so on. And this is more than the sort of old school track, I guess you could call
I
it.
was I was up in at the KTH in Stockholm when Sundar Pichai, CEO of Google, was there and talked to the students. And the head of machine learning or AI at the KTH was, well, great talk, but you could hear a nudge of, yeah, we've been doing this for a number of years, and now it's another hype cycle for AI. And it is, of course. I mean, absolutely, and it is impressive what's happening. But there is also a level of hype to generative AI. I think it's going to be extreme. It's literally revolutionizing a lot of things. But it's not the answer to everything.
No, and at least I'm pretty happy to not build my company on someone else's company's product.
Agree.
And both from a sort of risk perspective, but also a cost perspective, like we can optimize this and make it pretty nice for us to run. And yeah, it's good
Yeah,
in
and
many
this,
ways.
yeah, and the, I mean that plays into the accessibility as well, right? Because when it comes to quality and for our customers to invest in quality, if we look at traditional testing, manual testing, or tech testing, the massive costs and complexities associated. But for us, creating this accessibility and making it super easy for people to use, part of that is also a price tag. I mean, we can't. It doesn't matter what the value is, if you don't understand the value, you're not going to pay. Like I think at some point, I found the base pricing for test.io, which is SaaS, if I understand it correctly, and I'm not saying it's not a negative thing at all, but if I understand it correctly, it's a software as a service where testers can get assignments and on your website and test things. And the starting price, if I got it right, was around $3,000 per month, which is significant. I mean, that's a significant investment that you have to do, which is understandable. But still, comparing that to having your own testers, it's very, very accessible. For us, I mean, what we're looking at are below $100. Even we're looking at pricing models down to maybe $2, $3 on a monthly basis because of what Oscar is saying. Not basing it on very expensive technology or humans makes it affordable as well and accessible through that.
Yeah, like our goal of making the web better wouldn't be very practical if we could only make 20 websites better because it costs so much.
I guess I was going to say that kind of leads us really nicely into another question or point that was brought to the podcast as well. And you guys have talked a lot about building the product, but I guess we're going to do building the product now versus building the company. We've talked about Squidler has been going 18 months. You guys got together and kickstarted it all. What's the difference here between building this product that you're offering, service you're offering, versus building the company, building the recognition, the brand?
Well, I think, first of all, this, right? This is part of building that brand and engaging with the community and trying to be more vocal and out there. Building the company is different, right? It's the broader and bigger perspective. Our goal in the long run is, of course, to be able to focus completely on this. When that happens, we don't know, but we'll see. We'll see what the future holds for us. But I mean, the perspective on building the company is you make different choices when you think more long term. When you're thinking just building a product, it's easier, I think, to, I always promote the perspective of one step at a time. Like, you learn from every single step that you take, and you're going to evolve in your thinking and your learning, and you're going to make more informed decisions. I think the difference between building a product and building a company is the direction that you're looking at. How far ahead into the future are you aiming when you're taking the next step? For us, building a product has been a little bit like, what's the next step? How can we explore this? How can we do this? When we're looking at building a company, it's more the movement around a better web creating those kind of activities.
Yeah. When it comes to the way we set this up, the way we've been working with this, choosing, with all the challenges and risks by doing this on the evenings, that has enabled us all to have decently paying day jobs, which means that we aren't afraid from getting our bread and butter. We aren't afraid to feed our families, right? Which is kind of a relaxing feeling that enables us to not have to run too fast. And we can only imagine this because we haven't been in this situation ourselves, but using someone else's money and basically wasting their money, or not wasting them, but using their investment and making sure not to waste it, but doing the right choices, would probably put a lot of stress on us that might not have been able to get us to where we are today. Just the possibility to explore building an accessibility or language check, spell check module might not have been possible had we had a small chunk of venture capital and a large chunk of what if. Would also have been very hard to be six people so early with only a vision. At least now we've gotten the chance to kind of try our wings, get a few customers, because we actually have customers, and that's a big thing. That was a big thing for me, at least. Like, someone actually chooses to pay for this. It's not only us who believe in it. Someone else also believes in it. That's really nice. I'm getting that feedback. I'm in doubt whether we have been able to get the Vantage team together on venture capital so early. So we'll see how that changes in the future. But I mean, doing this and doing evenings has been one of our greatest strengths, as well as one of our greatest weaknesses in some sense. But I would really do it like this again if I had a choice, to be honest.
I think even though evenings and weekends have its own kind of pressure on it, having no external pressure in the absolute beginning and infancy of an idea, and being able to be calm and meticulous in your choices and what you want to do and why you want to do it, and be like true to the bigger picture and the why, I think that's important, because the moment that you start to put in other dynamics into it, if your base plate that you're standing on isn't strong enough, you're going to be potentially pulled in many different directions that might be wrong. For us, I think we stand on on solid ground right now, with a tested product that is verified with customers. So it's going to be an interesting journey ahead, I think.
Also, this first year plus has not only let us build the product as we sort of envision it and not be too have too much pressure from the outside, but also it let us prove to ourselves that it actually will work, which was not a given thing when we started. It has that much sort of technical depth and insecurity in the whole execution of it. I think that we would be in a very different place if we had investment at that point, and how convinced we were.
I mean, when you shot me down 3 years ago when I said, "Hey, maybe we can do property-based testing without writing any specs," then, I mean, at that point, you didn't even think that it was possible. I'm naive enough to just go like, "Hey, but maybe it is." So that's a nice property of me. But I mean, at the end of the day, we had to prove that to ourselves that we could do it, and convinced ourselves that it's valuable to do it, right, for our customers and for everyone.
And I guess it's a fine line between, I guess it's a fine line between kind of spending too long time to build something on your own, down in your own cellar, even if it's six people or five people, and then coming out and say, "Look, I built this thing and nobody wants to use it," and testing it earlier. But I think right now it feels good. Ask us again in 3 years. Maybe we will have made a lot of different choices, but I like what we've done. And we've also grown as individuals and as a team, because this is another way of working than we used to work.
I was just going to say as well that, you know, as following on from what Matthias said as well, like, if you can't convince yourself that this is something worthwhile, how are you expected to convince somebody else to invest into you guys, right? So you almost need that first year, 2 years, 3 years, however long it might be, to convince yourself and also have this sort of proof of concept, if you will, before you then go out and ask somebody to invest 20k, 50k, whatever it might be.
Yeah, I mean, I talk a lot in both my day job and everywhere about earning the right. I think it's it boils down to that. You need to get to a point where you earn the rights for opening up the next door, taking the next step in that journey. It doesn't matter if it's a product development in a large enterprise or if it's a startup. It's all about that, proving the worth of what you're doing and what you believe in, and then earning the rights to move forward.
Perfect. Well, guys, is there any other messages you wanted to send out to the audience? Is there any additional information we've missed out on today's episode that hasn't been covered that we want to get in there before we conclude?
No, I think this was a great talk, and thank you, Jacob, for the opportunity to come on here and talk about this. Well, of course, the obligatory small push. Go to the squidler.io and try it out. You don't have to sign up even. You can just try it out. Put your URL in there and try it out. And you'll see whether or not we find any problems on your website. Even if it's just the initial small test of 1 minute, you'll get basic accessibility testing, language testing, and functional testing. Try it out. Let us know what you think.
Thanks a lot for having us.
No problem. Yeah, I guess before we end the podcast, obviously thanks to you guys as well for jumping on. Once again, for everybody at home, Squidler, and we've had Christopher Suarez, Matthias Ask, and Oscar Winstrom. Again, just before we wrap up, I normally do my conclusion, as you guys probably know. You know, if you are hiring for technical roles, if you are looking for a new role, feel free to get into touch with us here at Evolution as well. Or if you or anyone you know would like to be featured on a future podcast, you can drop me a message too. Obviously, I'm Jacob Byerly, and you can find me on LinkedIn, or you can email me at jacob.byerly@evolution-nordics.com, or equally visit our website at evolutionjobs.com. Thank you again to all our guests, and thank you guys at home for listening. We hope you can join us next time.